It was when you came on your official visit, they played like the old school movie with the Four Horsemen and the old school Notre Dame, and you got the, and there's a...
Now that's a follow-up question, Eric Hansen. That's a heck of a follow-up question right there.
If you can be physical and if you can take the breath out of somebody by hitting them, man, it don't matter how many yards or what the offense is or what the schemes are, that'll always be the same.
But I still think there's a place for Notre Dame and the ideals of Notre Dame football in the wide, broad scope of the sport right now.
Eric, I'm hoping I don't run into you in South Bend because it'll probably cost me a round of drinks.
From the South Bend Tribune and ND Insider, this is the Pot of Gold Podcast with Tyler James and Eric Hansen.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Pot of Gold, an ND Insider podcast. I'm Tyler James, and I'm joined once again by the one and only Eric Hansen. Together, we cover Notre Dame football for ND Insider and the South Bend Tribune. The Pot of Gold podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's. Satisfy your craving for hand-breaded chicken and fresh-made salads. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today or order online at zaxbys.com/podcast. And Tire Rack, the way tire buying should be. Notre Dame put angst aside for a weekend and handled Duke in a 38-7 victory on the road. Now the Irish will host Navy on Saturday, and there's always a chance for angst against the midshipmen. This week on the podcast, we wanted to talk to someone who has a little experience trying to defend the triple option, so we reached out to former Notre Dame defensive lineman Jerron Jones. And with Jerron's younger brother Jameer continuing to take a bigger role in Notre Dame's defense, Jerron will certainly be invested in the outcome this weekend. Jerron, thanks for joining us.
How you doing?
I'm doing well, Jerron. I'm curious, what's it been like to watch your brother Jameer and everything he's been able to do this season?
It's been awesome. You know, it's kind of awesome to see how he's grown to take his, you know, play from the practice field to the games, because, you know, he's been taking a lot of reps in practice, you know, learning a new position and whatnot. But, you know, it's good to actually see him out there actually making plays, and, you know, that actually has significance in the game. So, you know, it's awesome.
It seemed like he played all over the place in high school, and then Notre Dame originally had him at linebacker, and now he's at defensive end. Did you kind of see this path for him? Did you feel like he'd end up at defensive end and then he'd end up being pretty good at it?
No, I saw him staying at linebacker, anything possibly going to the offensive side of the ball, because that's one thing that he's been good at in high school. So, you know, I didn't see him because I didn't think he would get this big, but Jameer is huge now. He's like, what, 260? Yeah. So, I saw more of an offensive role, but that's the thing about utility players. It's hard to find a niche, you know, somewhere where they fit at home, because, you know, they can play so many positions and they can actually do well at each position that they do play. But, you know, it's just trying to find what best suits him and what best suits the team as well. So, you know, it's awesome to see that, you know, he actually has found a home playing on the defensive line. I wish he was there when I was a freshman. I mean, when I was a fifth year still. Because, you know, I could actually taught him a lot more, you know, been more willing to work with him. So, because, you know, he was a linebacker when I was there. So I thought, James could, you know, help him out at linebacker. But, you know, if he was going to be at D lineman, I was going to work with him from the start.
Jerron, Jameer had an opportunity to potentially maybe redshirt this season, and then with Dalen Hayes getting injured, it was clear that there would be playing opportunities for him, and so they've gone ahead and used him this season. How has he sort of handled that process? Did he lean on you for guidance through that at all, and what's allowed him to be mentally tough through that?
He's reached out to me a few times, but, you know, I just told him, just do whatever they want, what it is they want you to do, because, you know, it's for the team. You know, it might be better for you to redshirt, but, you know, the fact that he wants to play and help his brothers and play his true senior year, you know, with all the guys that he came in with, that he's grown close with, he was really looking forward to this year, and the fact that they might have a shot at the playoffs, so he was really excited. But, you know, he just took it day by day, you know, just thought, you know, did whatever what was needed of him, what was required of him, and, you know, he's done well. So I'm happy with the way he's handled it.
Jerron, when you guys were in high school, did you see much triple option? Because I know in your early years at Notre Dame, you were really good at defending it, and I'm just curious if that was just natural ability or if you had some familiarity with it.
Yeah, more familiarity with it. We played a couple teams that did run the triple option. And, you know, you kind of get – the more you play against, the better off you'll be. But, you know, it's just hard for people in college now because, you know, they get ready for spread offenses, air raid, and all the pro style. You hardly ever see triple option maybe once or twice a year. So, you know, it's much tougher to get ready for in college because, you know, you have all these other dynamic offenses that you're preparing for as well. And, you know, it's just like it's just the one offense you forget about because you don't cover it in camp. You don't cover it, you know, during the regular season at all until, you know, it's time to play a team that actually runs it.
Daron, how would you describe are the basic keys to making sure that the defense it plays well against a triple option defense and kind of shutting that down?
Just knocking them off schedule. They try to get three, four yards per carry, so you know they end up with a third or fourth and one, so they can actually go for it. If you knock them off schedule and force them to have to throw the ball on third down, you know, and reduce the chance of it being a four down sequence and getting the punt team on, I think that would be the key to the game because it gets the offense off the field.
And what is it like going up against the cut blocking that Navy does? I know that's a big topic every time that Notre Dame plays Navy. How do you prepare yourself to do that, and is it as bad as people make it sound?
It's really not. It's just a mentality that you have to carry. You also got to remember, like, these guys are actually military trained, so, you know, they're trained to go at you regardless how big, how small you are. They have tactics on how to attack you. So, you know, it's a mental grind, and, you know, you just got to be able to put your nose to the grindstone. There's no ways around it. You got to be more physical than they are.
Okay, I'll go down this road with you. I know your last year you played really sparingly against Navy and Army, and Brian Kelly said, well, you know, it's not his game and so forth. And yet you had been really effective in your younger years against the triple option. Was Brian Kelly just kind of trying to protect your future in the NFL?
Yes, I believe so. And, you know, that's one of the things that, like, I didn't – because as much as I really wanted to play in that game, I thought it was – but I agreed with the coaches and the staff that, you know, we had other suited guys that were better suited to play against all triple options. And also, it was kind of on me, too, because I did kind of play with – too high of a pad level. So sometimes I was a liability. Like back in 2014, I felt like I was more of a liability than a help to the team because of the way I played with high pad level and stuff like that. And, you know, guys would just get under me and, you know, take me out of the play. So it was a little bit of both, you know, but, you know, it is what it is.
You're listening to the Pot of Gold podcast presented by Zaxby's. Before we hear more from Daron Jones, let's take a short break.
We know you like football, so do we. We're TireRack.com, and this is our version of a two-minute drill, except it's only 30 seconds. TireRack.com has an enormous selection of tires. Not sure which ones to buy? Use our tire decision guide to find the right tires for your vehicle and the way you drive. Then get them shipped fast and free on all orders over $50. Shipping is in as little as one day, free. TireRack.com ships to independent, recommended installers. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be. Touchdown!
Daron, what kind of advice have you given Jameer about playing defensive line now? Is there stuff that you can teach him, even though you played more interior line in college than he has with him playing out defensive end? What kind of advice have you given him?
It's just really just to be physical and use his hand. He doesn't. That's one of the things I constantly get on him because he can make so many more plays. He just uses his hand, set block. Actually engage with the lineman rather than trying to, you know, run him over because, you know, or trying to run around him. And you know, one thing about Jameer, a lot of people don't realize Jameer's really strong. He's a really strong kid. He plays with a lot of physicality. And if he just uses hands, like, you know, that's one of the things I've been harping on him with, and, you know, just trying to learn play recognition, not trying to stop or freeze up whenever he sees, you know, plays to be made in front of him because, you know, he's so skeptical of his responsibilities and stuff. And he just plays loosely and plays freely. He plays better and better. And that was one of the things I saw when he made those sacks against Virginia Tech and then against Virginia. You know, those games.
Jerron, you transitioned to the offensive tackle in the NFL, and so I'm kind of curious, do you feel like that gave you more knowledge to help teach Jameer the different things that maybe you know what works well against offensive linemen because you've played offensive line now?
Yeah, the pre-snap, you know, just seeing what guys are aligned in, you know, just seeing what possible runs can happen in this formation, you know, what passes can come about. Also, you know, just the way, just thinking, just giving him more of an insight of the mind of an offensive lineman, what they're trying to do to him when they are trying to attack him, you know, stuff like that, so he can recognize, have better play recognition and more awareness of what's going on, rather than, you know, just thinking they see ball and get ball, trying to look for the ball, you know, just seeing, reading his keys better, and, you know, what's leading to him making more plays.
Jerron, it seemed like it was fairly quick when you went to the NFL that you flipped over to the offensive side of the ball. And I'm wondering, did that ever come up at Notre Dame? Was there ever a consideration about moving you to the offense?
It was never a consideration. It was more of a, it's your choice. If you want to move to the offensive side of the ball, we'll be more than willing to do it. But, you know, we like where you are defensively. So, you know, we're just going to stick with defense unless you say otherwise. And I never really thought I was going to be playing offensive line in the NFL either. So, you know, I thought defense was going to be the position I was going to play for the rest of my career.
You mentioned you thought that Jameer might end up on offense at Notre Dame. Do you think he would have been a tight end or an interior offensive lineman? Where do you think he would have ended up?
I think he would have been a tight end. Yeah, I think Jameer would have been a great tight end because he plays with physicality. I think he'll do a great job blocking. He can also go up and get the ball as well. So, you know, I thought tight end, if anything, probably more of a possession receiver. But, yeah, tight end was going to be the way I was going to go.
Jerron, you had an interesting career in the time span that you were at Notre Dame, in starting back early in your career and then ending with 2016, which didn't go well. What has it been like seeing the program evolve and develop since you've been gone from Notre Dame? Has it surprised you how Notre Dame has been able to get back into the playoff hunt and make it to the college playoff last season? Or did you expect the program to bounce back the way it did?
I expect them to bounce back because of the fact that, you know, you think about back in 2014 when we had all those injuries and also we were young. And then we go to USC and get smoked, and everyone wants to, you know, talk about how bad we are. And then 2015, we come back and have a great season. You know, we go 10-2, but we were in the talk of going to the playoff for the majority of the season. And honestly, I think if we didn't have the injuries that we had that year, I think we would make the playoffs. I think we probably would go undefeated because I thought that was a really good team that we had.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's good to see those guys grow and, you know, experience what they've experienced. Because, you know, you also got to remember, 2016, all of our secondary were mostly freshmen, besides Drew and Cole. And, you know, those guys were learning, you know, and playing in the secondary, especially in college football, it's a swagger you got to carry. It's a mentality you got to carry. You can't let things get by you. You can't let things happen to you. And if things do happen to you that you don't, you know, like a wide receiver catching for a touchdown or something like that, you got to just move on and next play mentality. And that's one of the things that I've saw guys grown, you know, think about guys like Julian Love, Troy Pride, Jalen Elliott, all those guys, how much they've grown and how much the secondary now is one of, you know, the strongest points of our defense now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's all that, you know, just, It's experience and, you know, growth that takes time, and sometimes that happens. And, you know, they don't have the necessary all the senior leadership that they have because Max was gone that year and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm glad that them guys were able to turn around and, you know, leave a lasting mark at Notre Dame.
Jerron, your mom was one of my favorite moms of all time, and I hope she's doing well. I think her plan when you left Notre Dame was maybe both your mom and dad were thinking about going back to nursing school. Is that what ended up happening?
Uh, Yeah, my mom is still in nursing school. You know, she just takes classes here and there because she still works. But, you know, they're just enjoying life. They just celebrated their 20-year anniversary a couple weeks ago back in late October. So, you know, they're just enjoying life and, you know, happy that the house is an empty home now because now my sister is going off to college as well. So, you know, they're just enjoying each other. And that's one thing I'm happy that they're doing. And, you know, they're doing really good, though.
Now, Jaron, what's been going on with you? I know you had some stints on some NFL teams. I believe you were drafted by the XFL. What are you doing right now, and then what's the future look like for you?
Right now, I'm doing XFL. I got selected by the New York Guardian, and I think the only Notre Dame guys on that team is me and Scott Daly, okay, who's a long snapper. And then outside of that, I live in Dallas, and I work for a private jet brokerage firm called Vault Aviation. So I work there part-time and play ball.
So what do you do for them? I mean, I'm imagining you're not a pilot, but you might be.
Yeah, no, I pretty much, in simple terms, I sell private flights to the rich.
Okay. So you probably have some Notre Dame clients.
Yeah, I've been trying to use my Notre Dame connections. I do have a couple. Tom Mendoza is actually one of them. So, you know, just been trying to reach out to old teammates and Notre Dame alums that, you know, that I can connect with.
That's awesome. I'm curious, what's it been like to watch this season for Notre Dame? Certainly high expectations going in, losing down at Georgia, getting blown out at Michigan. And, I mean, on one hand, you're a fan and an alum, and then you also have your brother on the team. I imagine there's a lot of emotions that go with that.
Yeah, I always find myself yelling at the TV, you know, like I'm a coach or something. But you know, I'm just being a fan like everyone else. So, you know, I can't help it. But, like, you know, those guys have been having a great season. You know, we've had some slip-ups. You know, there's been times, you know, we haven't been able to get things going. But, you know, overall, I think the way that they played against Duke this past week really was able to get them back on the same page and get them back to where they were, you know, back in the month of September and October, you know, looking where we were keeping our heads held high after we had lost to Georgia because, you know, we went to the number three team and, you know, only lost by six when everyone had us getting blown out. So, you know, the fact that, you know, that those guys were able to get out of that, you know, there's at some points ebbs and flows of every season, and, you know, they were able to get out of that as, you know, start getting things flowing again. I think I like our chances going on the rest of the season. I think we can go to a New Year's Six Bowl and get a big one.
Jaron, last one from me. I would imagine kind of starting from scratch as an offensive lineman had to be difficult. Did you reach out to any of your former teammates who were first round draft choices, or Harry Hiestand, or did you just kind of learn through whatever team you happen to be playing for?
Mostly learned through, you know, whatever team I played for, because, you know, every coach teaches it differently. But, you know, I was able to work. I spent the longest time I've been with a team was with the Cowboys, so I was with Zach a lot. So, you know, I've learned a lot through him. And, you know, I've been also trying to talk to Ronnie. I think I'm going to get with Ronnie this offseason to work, get some work in with him, because, you know, he's more of a tackle and, you know, he's one of the best at it. So, you know, I've been keeping in touch with Ronnie, and, you know, I think we're going to get together this offseason.
All right, Jaron, well, we appreciate you taking time to talk to us today and sharing your insight, and good luck certainly to you in the XFL, and good luck to your brother the rest of the season. You're listening to the Pot of Gold Podcast presented by Zaxby's. Now it's time for Place Your Bets.
How much you want to make a bet I can throw a football over the mountains?
This is our segment dedicated to the degenerates. Let's take a shot at some predictions for the Navy game this weekend. First one I have for us, Eric, is over under 275 rushing yards for Navy.
I think Notre Dame would take that. I'm going to say, boy, that's difficult. I'm going to say Navy's going to get some garbage yards late in the rushing game, so I'm going to say over.
Yeah, I'm going over as well. They've only been limited to less than 300 yards twice this season, so it would be quite the accomplishment if Notre Dame could hold them under 275. So I will go over. I think they might be able to hold them under 300, but I'm not sure that 275 will be able to Notre Dame will be able to get that. Next one, over under 7.5 touches for Jafar Armstrong.
That's a tough. I think you got to give him more opportunities. I'm not quite sure why there weren't more at Duke, but I'll say over, and I think that's more hoping than it is predicting.
Yeah, I'm going over as well, even though it seems like everything is telling you to take the under on that. His role is such a enigma in this offense, and he did have success last year against Navy, so maybe that was the biggest nice reason I'm thinking that maybe he goes over. I just think they have to figure out both him and Tony and getting those guys right and getting those guys as important parts of this offense. Give them as many opportunities as they can in a game like this. So I will go over.
If there is a game, I think, in his career to this point that's optimally how they would use him, it was that Navy game.
Right, exactly. And whatever was working then, they got to find a way to get that to work again because this offense needs it. Next one is over under 49.5 rushing yards for Ian Book.
I don't think the design quarterback runs are going to be as big against Navy just because of their structure. I think there's a lot of gambling with that defense, and they've gambled really well, but I think there's going to be more opportunities for traditional runs and also passing to defeat that defense. So I'm going to say under.
I'm going to go over. I think the offense looks a bit different when Ian Book is able to run the ball, and whether it's design runs or him making good reads and escaping when he should rather than when he feels like he needs to, when he doesn't need to, the offense seems to look a lot better. And so I think it also gives him confidence maybe more when he's passing, if he's having some success as a runner too. So I think Notre Dame's going to try and get him involved in that, and I think he should be able to have some success against this defense doing that. So I will go over. I don't know that he's going to do what he did against Duke, but I think he'll be able to hit 50 yards this game, so I'll go over. Next one is over under 10.5 offensive drives for Notre Dame.
I think they get to 12, so I'm going over.
I'm going over as well. I sound like a broken record here. I looked at the three games Navy gave up the most points, and I can't remember the games off the top of my head, but those all were like 12, 13, and 14. So I feel like if Notre Dame's going to have success, they're going to have more than 10.5 offensive drives. Maybe even that the drive number goes up because Notre Dame has a few three and outs, but they need to get Navy's offense off the field. That's the biggest part in getting so many drives is the defense not allowing Navy to eat so much time off the clock. So I will go over. I don't know that it's going to be much more than 11, but I'll take the over as well. Last one, over under 7.5 tackles for Drew White.
Well, the middle linebacker last year had 14 in this game, and Notre Dame shifts its scheme a little bit. Every year the numbers are a little bit different, except wherever Greer Martini happens to be playing, he got a whole bunch. Drew had, I think, 6 in relief of Tranquil last year. I'm going to go over.
Yeah, I'm going over as well. Maybe I didn't do a great job setting lines this week. I ended up going over on all of them. But I just think he's going to be very active. He seems to have a knack for playing against the option. He handled it well in his first real action last season. And I remember talking to him earlier this season. We asked him about that, and he said he hadn't really played against it before in high school, so it was just something that he was able to figure out and learn on the fly. And I think as long as you're reading your keys well and know what you're looking for, that Drew White should be able to have a pretty big game in the tackle column. Then, of course, we have a final score prediction. What is your final score prediction for this Saturday, Eric?
I will say Notre Dame 30 and Navy 28.
All right. I am going to go Notre Dame 35, Navy 21. I think this is going to be a tough game, but I think Notre Dame can pull ahead, and I think that obviously harms Navy's offense when they get in a bit of a hole, and so maybe they're able to do that. But this is probably the game I'm the most concerned about for Notre Dame in terms of being able to win this game. I think the against Boston College and Stanford, there's not as much to worry about. But this could go any direction, but I think I was impressed by what Notre Dame did against Duke, and I think they should be able to carry some of that momentum and found some things that will continue to work for this offense, and the defense should be okay, if not great against Navy. All right, now it's time for Junior or Junior.
It's Junior.
My Junior.
Our Junior now.
Our Junior. Our Junior.
This is our segment to highlight one junior by name or one junior by grade. This week, I wanted to talk about junior linebacker Drew White. He led Notre Dame with 7 tackles in the win over Duke, and he also had a sack. He is currently second on the team in tackles this season with 55, just one behind Asmar Bilal, and he's had at least 5 tackles in 7 games this season. Is Drew White still getting better as a linebacker for Notre Dame in this defense?
Yeah, I would say he is, because he's just, I think, understanding tendencies of offenses, the looks a little bit better. I mean, he's always been pretty good at play diagnosis. I think the ceiling on him is how good of an athlete he is, and maybe that shows up more in coverage than it does,
sure,
again, you know, running downhill and tackling. But I like him. I mean, I'm not sure what he looks like a year or two down the road, but I like where he is right now.
Yeah, and I think another place that athleticism might limit him a little bit is if maybe he misdiagnoses a play and puts himself in a bad position. He's not athletic enough to redirect himself and be able to still make the play. He might eliminate himself from making the play in some of those situations. But yeah, I am pleasantly surprised by the play of Drew White this season. I would have not predicted that we'd go this far into the season with him having a full grasp of that starting position and not really relenting much playing time at all to anyone behind him. So he continues to get better. He continues to play well. And it seems like even against the different offenses Notre Dame has played against, he has found a way to contribute and be more of an asset than a weakness in this Notre Dame defense, and so he deserves some props for that. All right, now it's time for questions.
Just tell me when you guys are we done with USC? Everybody's done. You guys are kidding me. That's all you want to talk about. All right, let's go.
You can submit questions to us on Twitter each week. I'm at TJamesNDI, and Eric is at EHansonNDI. And to no one's surprise, we have a handful of Ian Book questions again this week. But to change things up a bit, I'm going to leave those till the end of the podcast, so we'll hit some other topics first. First one I have is from Baba Ganoush at @PLACT_ITFDB. Any insight on why Braden Lindsey stayed home due to fatigue when Brian Kelly has to know that response will raise eyebrows? With few exceptions, it seems Notre Dame's underclassmen are never strong enough, don't grasp the playbook well enough, need to add weight, etc., which keeps them off the field.
Well, there's a lot there. I will say on my Twitter feed, it didn't raise eyebrows. It raised the snark level. There are people that volunteered that maybe he was fatigued from not playing enough. I like the fact that he phrased his question with some exceptions, because there have been exceptions of people that played early.
Right.
I think some of it is wide receiver recruiting. The nature of it at Notre Dame, they haven't got a lot of plug-and-play receivers, and so there's usually a reason why they're 3-star guys or low 4-star guys. It's because they have some growth to do, either in the passing game and understanding things, or physicality. They have to grow there too, and we know that Matt Bayless does a great job with that. Singling it down to Lindsey, you know, he's missed, when he redshirted his freshman year, he missed some time, both conditioning and practicing, with concussion issues. He's also had that this year. So I think some of maybe the fatigue is health, are related to health issues of the past and just maybe not having that momentum. But, I mean, I've been, you know, banging the table that he needs to get his opportunities. And if he's ready to do that this week, still think you got to play him and see what you have in him.
Yeah, fatigue certainly doesn't sound like a good term, especially for football tough guys.
Yeah.
To be a reason why a guy wouldn't make the trip and possibly play. But Brian Kelly did explain that part of that assessment is based on a program called Omega Wave. I did some research on that, and it's this program that uses data from your body to determine how an athlete is sort of recovering and handling everything that's being asked of them physically. So I would counter that by saying Braden Lindsay isn't saying he's tired and that's why he's not traveling to the game. It's more than that, and Notre Dame believes in this system that is giving them scientific information about how these guys are responding. As far as Braden fitting in this idea of guys aren't coming to Notre Dame ready to play right away, I don't think Braden was a guy that came to Notre Dame ready to play, and I think some of what his speed has sort of blinded some people for some of his flaws. I mean, he came to Notre Dame around 165 pounds. He was not a big guy, and he needed to add weight, and he needed to mature physically to be able to contribute at Notre Dame. And I think because he had a ways to go with that becomes more physically demanding for a guy early on in his career. And so then that maybe leads to some of these fatigue issues. And certainly the concussion issues are something you want to take seriously early on in a player's career at Notre Dame. So I think he had some transformation ahead of him. And sometimes that happens when you have a lot of work to do. There are hiccups in that, and it's not necessarily something that can click right away. And so certainly we would all like to see Braden Lindsay have a greater role in this offense, and him not always making trips doesn't help that case. But I think you just got to be patient, and it's just what the situation is and what he can handle. I think you have to sort of be patient with that and not push him beyond his limits, because that's not going to help anyone either.
The thing that I do like about him is this kid has drive, and when he can't make the trips, he's upset.
Right.
And he dropped track, and I think that was a big commitment to football. And so sure. I would not give up on him.
No, I wouldn't either. Next question is from Chris Koziak at C_K_42. Who's up next in the defensive end rotation, and who's the new Greer Martini in stopping the option?
Up next in the defensive end rotation, Tyler wrote about this in his notebook this week. Jameer Jones is going to start. I think Ade Ogundeji is going to play both sides, so he's going to back up
right
at each side. Ovi Ogofu is going to get some more playing time. And then you might have a sprinkling of Isaiah Foskey. I think Brian Kelly, when the injury first happened to Julian, what do we want to do here? And then kind of said, you know what, I think we can redshirt him and get what we need out of the other defensive ends without another injury happening.
Yeah, and I think we might see some Justin Adamalola at the strong side defensive end too. So you essentially have five guys to play the two spots with Khalid Kareem and Jameer Jones, Adetokunbo Ogundeji, and then Justin Adamalola and Ovi Ogofu. So I know the Foskey question is something we'll discuss a little bit later, but people – or Notre Dame feels good about where it's at with some of these other guys, that it doesn't feel like it necessarily has to rely on Isaiah Foskey, and that's probably a good thing, and speaks to the depth of this defensive end position. In terms of who's the new Greer Martini, I think Drew White is someone that we expect to have a lot of success for against this triple option. I imagine Alohi Gilman will be all over the field. I'm kind of curious to see what Clark Lee has planned for how he will use Kyle Hamilton. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, I think both of those guys could be successful against the triple option. And I think the defense might look a little bit different than its traditional defense. Notre Dame has done that in the past. And so finding a way to get all those guys involved will be helpful. I don't know if there's going to be someone as adept as Greer Martini, who I gave Eric some trivia on yesterday, that had 44 tackles against Navy in his four games at Notre Dame. So I don't know that anyone's going to necessarily get to 11 tackles, but we will see how that pans out. Next question I have is from Brett Kovach at Brett Kovach. Who is the starting running back right now? It seemed like Sebo Flemister and Jameer Smith were much more effective than Armstrong and Jones.
Some of that might have to do with when they enter the game and books runs maybe opened things up for the traditional running
right.
game a little bit more. They certainly had as many, if not more, opportunities than the other two guys. I still think it's Armstrong and Jones as the top options, and I think as we get into the final three regular season games, it'll play out more that way. I was surprised to see Sebo. I thought he was going to go back burner kind of here to the end of the season.
Yeah, and they didn't use Tony Jones quite as much I would have anticipated, and Brian Kelly indicated after the game or since the game that Tony wasn't necessarily fully himself. So I think if Tony is totally healthy and feeling like himself, I think he is probably the lead back in this offense. He's had the most success, and they probably have the most trust in him, and he probably has the most clearly established skill set that Notre Dame feels comfortable with in the backfield. And so we're just going to have to see how he's feeling. Jafar Armstrong, we certainly think, can do a lot of things with this offense. And like we mentioned earlier, had success against Navy last year, so there could be some opportunities again this weekend. I think we're still going to only see small doses of Sebo Flemister and Jameer Smith moving forward unless some injury issues pop up for Tony and Jafar. Next question is from ER at Mr. Fantasy 20. Is Trevor Rulen going to play the whole game at right guard against Navy, or will Dylan Gibbons or John Dirksen get a few series?
I would imagine either Dirksen or Gibbons would play a little bit. If Trevor had his way, he would play every snap. If yeah. Trevor's body had its way, he would play no snaps. So I think there's probably the reality is going to be closer to what Trevor wants, but not completely what he wants. So I'd say, you know, the thing is, in a real tight game, which I expect this to be, you kind of want the guy that can recognize fronts and right. pressures. And Navy does that now. They went from dead last in the country in sacks and tackles for loss to 21st and 25th in those categories. So they do bring pressures.
Yeah, Brian Kelly has said that they want to give Trevor Rulen some breaks, but they haven't done that. So at this point, I'll believe it when I see it. And if they weren't willing to put Dylan Gibbons or John Dirksen in the game earlier in the second half against Duke, I don't see how there's going to be an opportunity in this Navy game that they're going to feel more comfortable than they would have in that situation. So it's a little perplexing when Brian Kelly keeps saying that. Even before last week, going into the Virginia Tech game, he said Josh Lugg was going to play some, and obviously Josh Lugg had to come in for Robert Hainsey, so that nixed that plan. But I was still even skeptical about going into that if they were going to actually do that, because they haven't necessarily been rotating guys in on the offensive line at all this year. So I will believe it when I see it. I think they rightly like Trevor Rulen better than those guys, but and I don't know how much they worry about, okay, if we lose Trevor this week, are we really in trouble the rest of the season? It's just fascinating to see how he's able to handle the load, and if these guys are really ready to contribute, because they weren't even the next guy after Trevor, because Josh Lugg was going to be that guy. So they're clearly Notre Dame sees a sizable gap between them. Next question is from Frank Serra at Frank Serra 3. Will Notre Dame put a spy on Navy quarterback Malcolm Perry, and how can Notre Dame stop him?
I don't know you would call it a spy per se.
Right.
So how do they stop him? You know, there's a few ways. I mean, one is, let me take different personnel. When Stephon Tuitt played at Notre Dame, mm-hmm. he was outstanding defensive end. Against Navy, he was a nose guard, and he was so powerful at 6'7" and over 300 that he had that push up the middle that really made it really made the quarterback limited his options, and that's probably Notre Dame's best success against Navy was that. I don't think they have somebody on the roster that does that. Some other ways that they've attacked it is try to get a little bit faster on the perimeter. One time they, against Army one year and against Navy the next year, they moved Robert Blanton, a cornerback, down into the linebacker level. Now, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah may be able to fill that role. So some of it is just doing things that you don't normally do as a defense, getting a little bit unconventional. I think that's the way to get Navy off schedule. The bad thing for Notre Dame about Malcolm Perry is he's learned how to pass. He is 7th in the country in passing efficiency, and he was awful. That's why he moved back to slot back,
yeah,
because they couldn't do it. And I watched him in a couple of games this year. you know, and the receivers are wide open. It's not like he's throwing in a tight windows.
Right.
But they surprise you when they do it. They just don't do it when it's third and long.
Yeah, and so a triple option almost becomes a quadruple option when you got a fourth option of who you're going to pass to. I think generally how you stop the triple option, everyone has assignments in terms of the interior guys are usually all responsible for making sure the fullback dive doesn't work, and then your edge guys, whether it's defensive ends or outside linebackers, those guys are generally going to be responsible for the quarterback, and then your safeties and cornerbacks are going to be responsible for the pitchmen. So I think that's probably going to be how. It might be slightly different in different variations. You don't want to be predictable defensively, so Navy can counter what you're doing. But I think that will probably be it. So on every down, Notre Dame's going to have at least one or two players that are responsible for Malcolm Perry, regardless of what he's doing. So I think the keys are to tackle well, don't let him get in space, and probably try to force him to pitch as much as you can to keep the ball out of his hands. So it's not going to be an easy task, and I'm curious to see how Notre Dame handles it. Next question is from Brent Leonard at Burt2834. Did Troy Pride's pride get hurt a bit in the offseason by repeatedly getting beat by Chase Claypool? Is that part of the reason for his sub-All-American play?
I think it stung him a little bit. Initially in spring and it wasn't until the end of spring where they really started experimenting with Troy Pride into the boundary as the boundary corner. And so when he was covering whoever was on the field side, he was doing really good. And then that's where Claypool doesn't play. And then when they put those two together, Claypool won most of those. And Troy's a very competitive guy. And, you know, I remember Brian Kelly saying something that they had to, you know, talk to him about, this is Chase Claypool, don't let it get to you. As they got into the season, you know, I understand why Brian Kelly made the flip to boundary corner. I don't think it suits Troy the best. Mm-hmm. I think he's better when he has to cover a lot of area and doesn't have the big physical receivers. But Brian felt like Troy was far and away his best cornerback, and that most of the action is into the boundary. There's the throws that are easier for the quarterbacks to make.
And the better receiver is there.
Right, and the better receiver. So he did not want to put a question mark on that side and let Troy do what he does best. So I would say Troy kind of not playing the position that suits him best also contributes to this.
Yeah, I would say the mistakes that we've seen Dante Vaughn make would probably be amplified if he were playing into the boundary and doing what Troy Pride's been asked to do. So Troy's done a good job. Did you ever think Troy Pride was going to be an All-American, though? I didn't really think that was...
I didn't think that was in the cards, but I thought he had a chance. You know, each year he's got incrementally better.
Right.
And I don't know that we see a Troy Pride and say, wow, he's much better than last year.
Right, yeah. And Troy Pride, to me, he's a good cornerback with great speed,
right,
as opposed to Julian Love, who was a great cornerback with just good speed. And so I think that's some of what we're seeing, that when he's put in a position that doesn't necessarily accentuate his speed, that he's not going to always have as much success. I don't think he has – I don't think is probably too nice to put it. He doesn't have as good of ball skills as Julian Love does. He isn't able to break up passes as well as he does. And a lot of times he seems like he's in the right position, but he isn't necessarily making the right move when the ball is getting there. Whether it's sometimes committing pass interference, getting away with maybe some pass interference, or just getting beat. So it's another guy, I think, sometimes we see how fast a person is and we're like, okay, this guy's going to be great because he's fast, but there are a lot of other things that go into cornerback play that can prevent you from being great if you're not on top of things. And he's been dealt a tough deck in terms of the responsibility he has to do that doesn't necessarily go with his skill set, but I think he's doing okay. And the Claypool thing, I mean, I wouldn't read into that at all. I don't think that has any impact. I think it's probably only made him better having to go against Claypool in practice. Next question is from Josh Melton at Joshua Melton. With injuries mounting, how do you like Notre Dame's chances to win out? Navy is a really good football team, and I don't think the Irish have won in Palo Alto during Brian Kelly's tenure.
I'm trying to think if they did. They certainly, let's see, 2012 they had them here, so I'm not sure. But if Notre Dame beats Navy, I think they'll win out. I think Boston College is really difficult matchup with their run game, but they're so imbalanced offensively, and their defense is bad. Stanford, KJ Costello makes them a better team, but man, you can throw on them all day long. They've got injuries on their offensive line that they haven't fully recovered from. They just lost to Colorado. I mean, if Colorado can beat Stanford, Notre Dame should be able to do it too.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you on where you position those games. I think this week, I think one thing that I'm interested to track is Ian Book, and is he more conservative than he's been? He's had his interceptions have increased in recent weeks, and I think those will be very important to avoid against a Navy offense. Is going to try to limit your possessions as much as you can, so you don't want to give Navy's offense the ball extra times by turning it over. So he's got to walk a fine line there, because I think he plays better when he's more aggressive, but also you don't want to be too aggressive where you're turning the ball over. So I know we haven't talked much about Ian Book yet. We'll get there soon, but I think it's going to be an important game for him against Navy. Next question is from $7 worth of Hoobastank at Buster Biven. The decision to not play Phil Dracovic has been explained as Brian Kelly owing it to the seniors to play for now. How does that square with redshirting defensive end Isaiah Foskey? Everyone agrees that he could help now, and Kelly conceded Foskey probably wouldn't be an ND for a fifth year.
Well, I just don't see them as parallel situations.
Yeah.
If Foskey plays, you know, I think he's had 3 tackles this year. I mean, it's in the low single digits versus a quarterback, which is the most important position on the field.
Right.
So you're talking about, are you elevating him to third or fourth string defensive end from fifth string defensive end versus flipping 2-1 at the quarterback?
Yeah, he's not going to be the reason Notre Dame wins or loses a game.
Right. What he might,
the quarterback will certainly be that.
Right. So that's where I think that the situations are different.
I also think the fact that Isaiah Foskey's just a freshman has something to do with that too. That Notre Dame's older players don't have these high expectations for Isaiah Foskey. He hasn't proven necessarily anything yet. So
I like him.
Right,
I think he's
gonna
be good.
I do too. But I don't know for sure we can say for certain that he's better than Ovia Gofu and Justin Adamalola right now. I think those guys, having been in this defense, have just as good of a shot of making an impact in their small roles going into these last few games as Isaiah Foskey would. So I think there's less consternation over Isaiah Foskey redshirting or not redshirting from the older guys, because they were all freshmen once before. A lot of them had to redshirt themselves, and now these guys actually get to play 4 games, so they at least get to see some action. So I don't know that they're going to be feeling terrible for Isaiah Foskey, and this is going to upset them that Notre Dame isn't playing Isaiah Foskey when maybe he could have a role in this defense. Next we got 2 questions here that are basically on the same topic. The first is from Vincent Sebastiano at Seabass Consultant. How real is the rumor of the possibility of Chip Long going to Memphis if their coach leaves? If it was to happen, would ND promote from within, or is a guy like Sean Gleason from Oklahoma State an option? I'm from New Jersey and remember what he did at Princeton and read somewhere that ND is his dream job. And then also David Shearer at NJIrish99_David asked, if Coach Long leaves for Memphis, who are the front runners to replace him? So I will handle this because I did some research on, one, where this rumor came from. I have no idea how real it is. I believe this gained traction yesterday based on a tweet from Tim Priester of Iowa Illustrated. Someone asked him if Chip Long becomes the head coach at Memphis, and then if he'd take Delvon Alexander and Lance Taylor with him. And then Tim said Chip Long to Memphis could happen, and Alexander and Taylor leaving Notre Dame for Memphis, ? And so I don't know if Tim was saying that he believes that there is some traction, that there would be some traction there for Chip Long to go to Memphis, or if he was more or less using that as a contrast that if Chip Long goes there, that doesn't mean Delvon Alexander and Lance Taylor are going there. So I'm not exactly sure what Tim is saying with that, because I think, to me, I read it more as like, just because Chip Long would leave, those guys are going to go to Memphis to take different jobs at Memphis when they could maybe have roles here at Notre Dame. It wouldn't make necessarily sense for those guys to necessarily follow him. And would Chip Long make sense at Memphis? If I'm just giving my opinion, I think maybe that could be a possibility. I don't think that it's to me, it's not like the Vanderbilt and Clark Lee potential. I think Chip Long was there for 1 year. I don't know that he necessarily loves Memphis or has an affinity for Memphis that would make him feel like he needed to leave. Certainly, that would probably be a pretty good head coaching job. If you're not going to get a Power Five job, I think Memphis is probably one of the more attractive jobs that could come open. So, would that make sense? Maybe. And then as for the candidates, I don't know about you, Eric. I don't necessarily have a list of guys that I look at as like, okay, if Notre Dame, especially during the season, if Notre Dame has a job opening, who should Notre Dame be going after? And then lastly, I looked into the Sean Gleason thing about him believing in Notre Dame as a dream job. And I think it's coming from, I saw multiple stories, from one from the Oklahoman and one from the Athletic, that James Perry, who is the current head coach at Brown, was quoted as saying that someday Gleason is going to be the head coach at Notre Dame. And from my understanding, Perry, who coached Gleason in college and then coached with him at Princeton, was only citing Notre Dame because he sees Notre Dame as sort of the pinnacle of college coaching, not that he thought that Sean Gleason wanted to become the head coach of Notre Dame. So it's just kind of both of these things have just come from little tiny phrases on the internet and have kind of grown into what people are turning into rumors. And so I don't know if there's truth to any of this stuff, but I felt like the information needed to be out there based on some of the discussions that are happening now. I don't know how you see any of this, and I know I just kind of rambled there for a long time.
Well, our producer may have to sneeze before I finish my answer. I'll just keep it short in that I think if Mike Norvell went to Arkansas, which some people are speculating he would be a top candidate there, the Memphis head coach, it would make sense for Memphis to look at Chip Long from the standpoint Mike Norvell and Chip Long have worked together before they were at Arizona State together, that Chip would not bring an overhaul of the offensive philosophy, that they could kind of plug him in and that they would be pretty similar and could maybe go uninterrupted in their success there. So whether Chip wants that job, I'm not sure. I think if I were Chip, I would look at it seriously and see, is it going to get any better for him as far as head coaching jobs? So that would be one that I would think he would at least give some consideration to.
Do you have any candidates?
I never do that. Yeah. I don't even do it for Kelly because it changes almost within a season about – like who the hot names are and who's going to be available and so forth. To me, it's a complete waste of my time to even go down that road because I got so many other things about the current team I'm looking at. My mind doesn't even work that way. When it comes to time to do that, then sure, it's time to find out who they're looking at or who makes sense for them to look at. But in the moment, I mean, who would have picked Jeff Quinn would have been Harry Hiestand's successor?
Right, right.
You know, if you had asked me, if Harry Hiestand leaves at the end of 2017, who do you think the candidates? Quinn wouldn't have been on my list anybody else's.
Yeah, no, we don't get paid enough to have the spare time to come up with these lists in advance.
But at some point, I did have a source tell me Quinn was very seriously in it, and I thought he had been drinking. and then it turns out, and I don't have anything against Jeff Quinn. I actually was one of the people that didn't throw my toys out of the cart when he got the job. Right. I said, this might work.
Sure. All right, next question is from at NDIrishFan88. Do you think that we're into the Ian Book portion of the questions now. Okay. Do you think that the game-winning touchdown drive was a huge confidence boost for Ian Book? He looked like a completely different quarterback against Duke than he has all year.
I mean, confidence is a big part of it. I think the Duke game helped him more than the Virginia Tech game-winning drive helped him. I think the Virginia Tech game-winning drive was kind of a mental, hey, get off my back, people, type of thing. But the Duke game, he actually, I think, did some of the things that long-term, if he continues to do them, he's going to start ascending as a quarterback again.
Yeah, I think the Virginia Tech game was something that he had to get behind him. He had to win that game, and I imagine the pressure was building within him as the game went on. I know Chase Claypool said that before that last drive against Virginia Tech, Ian Book was like excited, and it almost kind of weirded Chase out a little bit. He's like, "What? This is kind of strange." But Ian was very confident they were going to go down the field and go down and score, and they were able to do that. And I think it's allowed him to to be a little bit more confident. I think, like I mentioned earlier, I think when he's running the ball, I think he plays more confidently as well. Do you think that Ian Book looked completely different in the Duke game than he has at all at any part of this season?
I thought he was more comfortable in the pocket, and I think being such a force in the running game helps him.
Sure.
It not only helps him from a confidence standpoint, it helps open up other things that are going to make the things that he wants to do easier to do if he can do that against other teams.
Right. And then the reason I'd be, well, we can't get too far ahead of ourselves, is that he has played well at times this season, and then he's sort of not looked great. I mean, he played well against a certainly not great competition, New Mexico and Bowling Green, but certainly his confidence wasn't low after those games, so his confidence was certainly high, and then it didn't necessarily carry over into the next game. So I don't know that it's a thing that once it gets to a high level isn't going to go dip up and down, and his performance can be connected to that.
Well, he had his three worst games together as far as pass efficiency rating.
Right.
All three of this year were clumped together against those Power 5 teams. This actually represented an increase. He was up into the 130s, which isn't great, but it is a better place to be.
Sure. He's had a lot of not great moments, but I think he also has had some good moments. I think even the Georgia game, I think he played pretty well against Georgia, especially given the fact that he was basically carrying the offense on his own with no running game. So I think we'll have to see how it continues. I don't know that it's going to be a straight line either way with Ian Book, and that's kind of how college quarterback play goes. Next question is from Dave Simono at dsimono66. Where is Ian Book compared to Tommy Rees, the player, at this point of their careers? If Book lags, in your opinion, can he match or pass Tommy Rees?
Well, this is actually a pretty easy answer, because if you say, are you talking about Tommy's second year as a starter or his senior year, the numbers are almost identical.
Mm-hmm.
Tommy topped out at 135.4 in his pass efficiency rating. Ian is at 138.6 for this season. He was at 154 last year. Now, there's more to it. Ian's a better athlete. He runs better. The one thing that Tommy was better at and may always be better at, he gets the ball out of his hands quick. He made really quick decisions.
Yep.
So overall, as a quarterback, I take Ian Book at any point in his career over any point in Tom Rees's career, or Tommy Rees's career, just because, and it's not against a knock against Tommy. It's just Ian is a better athlete.
Yep.
And he expresses the offense better.
Yeah. Our friend Jude, who does some work over at One Foot Down at NDJRS, he actually charts the quarterback play by snap throughout their career. So Ian Book has had 1,405 snaps, according to Jude, 1,405. And so when Tommy Rees was 1,405 snaps into his career, here are some of the stats. Yards per completions, Tommy Rees was at 11.3. Ian Book is at 12. The completions percentage, Tommy Rees is at 63. Book is at 63.1. Touchdowns thrown, Rees had 39, Book had 44. Interceptions, now here's where the biggest differences are, in my opinion. The turnovers, Rees had more. Rees had 26 interceptions, Book had 17, and Rees had 6 fumbles lost, and Book has 3. But then on the flip side, Ian Book is sacked more. He's been sacked 35 times, and Tommy Rees was only sacked 21 times. So that reflects what you were saying about he gets the ball out quicker. Certainly he isn't going to run with it, but he's not necessarily going to get sacked as much as Ian Book has to.
I think in 2013, Notre Dame allowed 8 sacks, and Tommy Rees was the quarterback the whole year.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. So I agree. I think they aren't necessarily that far off statistically, but I think the fact that Ian can run, and I think he can maybe do some more things with his arm, even though he doesn't always do that, I think that the skill level is slightly higher for Ian Book than it is Tommy Rees. Next question is from Nick Nation at Mr_Groovy. Are you sick of Irish fans asking you guys why Phil Dracovic is not playing over Ian Book?
Not when it's put that succinctly. I don't like it when it's a big manifesto and Brian Kelly this, and it's 22 pages long like some of my questions in the last chat.
Yeah, to me, the thing that bothers me is that we keep getting asked it, and to me, the answer hasn't changed since the beginning of the season. I think what made Ian Book a better quarterback then is still the same, even if Ian Book's performance has gone up and down throughout the season. I don't know that Phil Dracovic has necessarily improved by a wide margin since the season began, and I think there was a clear gap between the two of them, and so I don't expect that there to be that gap to be any slimmer than it was then. So I don't believe that Phil Dracovic is a better quarterback than Ian Book right now, despite all the issues Ian has had. And so sometimes it's when you keep getting asked, it's like, well, I don't know what else you want me to say. I just think that Ian's the better quarterback, and so that's why I would keep playing the kid. So that is part of the I guess maybe annoyance when it comes to that, because there hasn't been a lot that has changed with my opinion, despite the performance this season. Next question is from Rick Dyrolf at Rick Dyrolf. Guys, all I hear from the media that covers Notre Dame is how Ian Book played well against Duke, and maybe he is turning the corner. I say big deal, it's Duke. He will show his true self against Wisconsin and Clemson next year. Do you think he will ever be up to that challenge? I say no.
Well, I do think it's a big deal, because I think the improvement has to come incrementally, and I think beating Duke and doing what against Duke doesn't make him the winning quarterback against Wisconsin or Clemson. But if he doesn't have that incremental improvement, there's no way it happens against those. So he certainly opened the door to become an improving quarterback again, an ascending quarterback again, and then we'll see if that trend continues. But if he doesn't, if he kept spiraling the other way, then there's no way it happens. So that's why I think it's a big deal. And I'm looking at this season right now, and then we'll figure it out after the season's over.
Yeah, and I think the Duke game is the only way that you can track his progression in this moment. We can't say, well, he's going to fail next year, so what does it matter what he's doing now? Yeah. We have to track how he is handling things now to be able to potentially predict what would happen in the future. Are there reasons to doubt that Ian Book would play well against Wisconsin and Clemson next year? Certainly. Do I think that means that he is incapable of living up to that or meeting that challenge? I don't think so. So I think that's why college football is fun to watch. Players are unpredictable. You don't know what's going to happen. It can change without a moment's notice, and players can make huge strides. I mean, certainly I don't want to compare Ian Book to Joe Burrow, because I don't think they're similar quarterbacks in any way, but no one would have predicted that Joe Burrow would have this kind of season based on how he played last year. And so
Ian Book was far and away the better statistical quarterback last year. It wasn't even close.
Right.
They were like 40 or 50 spots different in pass efficiency, and it's flipped itself the other way this year.
Yeah, and in my mind, experience is just a terrible thing to waste, and so that's a big reason why they're going to continue to stick with Ian Book and give him every opportunity to continue to develop and help him reach his potential and help Notre Dame's offense reach its potential. All right, that's it for this week's episode of Pot of Gold. If you don't already, you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. Leave us a review or rating if you like what you hear. The Pot of Gold podcast is presented each week by Zaxby's. Satisfy your craving for hand-breaded chicken and fresh-made salads. Stop by your neighborhood's Zaxby's today or order online at zaxbys.com/podcast. And Tire Rack, the way tire buying should be. Later this week, Tom Noy and Carter Carls will give you another edition of the Pot of Gold Extra Point. Stick with ndinsider.com for all your pregame and postgame needs for Notre Dame Navy.